Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Stop being stupid, people.
All bets are off.
You all suck.
On Morenci Unfiltered.
Scumbags!
Get on the grid, Sports Grid, Morenci Unfiltered, the podcast. Let's do this thing. On Monday's edition of the podcast, we went random rage style as I just riffed and ranted and raged about a couple of things that upset me over the weekend. We took a look at the NFL draft. One of the things that caught my eye, of course, I spent a lot of time on pitching about yesterday, the LA Lakers taking $4.6 million of small business loans, because we all know that the Laker organization nothing more than a small little business that's only worth $3.7 billion. And to be honest, if the Lakers actually went up on the market, they would get more than $3.7 billion. It would be like a bidding war. Nevertheless, it's interesting to see the media spin on it, which the Lakers returned the money. It's like the story should be, why the hell did they ask for the money in the first place? And the only reason they returned the money is because they were on the list. They didn't realize that publicly they were going to get sort of busted for taking $4.6 million. But nevertheless, it is what it is. I don't blame the NBA for the Los Angeles Lakers' greed. It wasn't the NBA. It was the Lakers that did it. But there's been a lot of talk about the NBA and what's happening. Are they going to play? Aren't they going to play? And Adam Silver has been pretty open and honest about the situation and stating they just don't know right now. But people have been talking a lot about the NBA because of the Last Dance documentary. And me and Pete Annapolis broke down episodes 1 and 2. And Pete Annapolis returns to the fold to talk some Last Dance documentary, Charles Barkley, Draymond Green feud, and other basketball news. Pete, always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing good, doing good. You almost had to drag me out of Las Vegas to bring me back to the show like Jordan did with Rodman, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and is Carmen Electra naked hiding behind the couch, though? That's the story.
I wish.
just for the record, actually, and I brought this up on Game Time Decisions, and even the producers of the documentary and Jordan's agents said after on Monday morning that it was sort of a misunderstanding. Jordan didn't go to Vegas, and the producers apologized and stated that it was kind of like it seemed like that was the case. But he didn't go to Vegas, that Rodman came back from Vegas.
Right.
And when he came back from Vegas, he had like a house, and he also had like a crash apartment place that he would party at. And it was right across the street from the arena. So I guess Jordan found out that he was back in the city, and he still hadn't reported back to the Bulls. And Jordan went across the street into the apartment. So it wasn't in Vegas, but that's the way the story went down. It was actually, across the street from the United Center. But nevertheless, what did you think about episodes 3 and 4?
Well, no, I think it was riveting in terms of, I like the way they're breaking down the 1997-98 championship season, but they're rewinding in the past with every individual, starting with Jordan, then with Pippen, and then we saw Dennis Rodman and the Detroit Pistons and the Bad Boys, and then a little bit of Phil Jackson. So, no, Gabe, it was incredible just to see how difficult the Bulls' quest to win their first championship really was. And that's why I respect Michael Jordan so much and Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant. They didn't jump ship. They didn't go join any other forces when they had a chance. They stuck together. They were a cohesive unit. They took their lumps, and they were difficult because losing to the Celtics and then losing to Detroit, who virtually beat them up, told them that they were going to beat them up and still beat them up whatsoever. Ah, man, just remembering those days. And I remember the 1989, the shot game against Cleveland, game five. And this was an epic game because the Cavaliers were stacked. They had Mark Price, Ron Harper, Craig Elo, Hot Rod Williams, Brad Doherty, Larry Nance. They had Lenny Wilkins as the coach. They could have gone far that year, but Jordan took it over, and then the amazing shot to win it. And how about Ron Harper, Gabe? When Lenny Wilkins said, hey, we're going to have Elo on Jordan on the last shot, and Harper said, I want to guard Jordan. And he said, no, we're going with Elo. And then Harper dropped an F-bomb. And then Jordan said, yeah, it should have been Ron Harper. So I got the love that you get to hear those quotes after such epic games.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's a good point that you raise, that they intertwine, you know, and, you know, for people who don't realize, too, you know, the whole Last Dance. So Phil Jackson knew it was going to be the last season with this team, and it was his last season. He was getting into it with Jerry Krause. So he actually wrote, like, a theme to the season for the team, the Last Dance. And he told them, like, those exact words, this is our last dance together. So let's make it count and let's go win. But it is great how they intertwine the history and how they got there before that, right? And it's just so well done. And what's cool is, so it's a lot like that wrestling documentary with Bret Hart, where they got lucky, where they were following Bret Hart around, and it turned out that that's when his contract came up and everything. And they caught all that stuff in Montreal with the Montreal Screwjob. So Jordan gave permission for these guys to follow him around. So they have that footage, and then they're able to take other footage. And for me, I think my favorite part of it is actually the interviews with Jordan, like the modern Jordan. And even this is from a few years ago, right? Like the interviews are from, I think, like, you know, they're from a couple of years ago, because I was reading Jordan didn't give permission to release this until 2015. And then they sort of, all right, they did the interviews and everything. So the interviews are modern, but I'd like to know exactly when Jordan sat down for this. But dude, like the glass, people are just fascinated by his tequila glass, which it's full, it's empty, it's in the middle. He's dropping F-bombs. And I don't know what version you're getting, but there's two choices, right? Like there's actually the censored version and the uncensored version. And I watched the censored version the first time. I was like, oh man, I can get this uncensored. It's much better uncensored. He swears a lot. But how drunk is he in these interviews?
Listen, he
looks like me in a road rage at trophies.
Yeah. He's having a couple. I don't know if he'll have that big bottle that you had the last time you were up here in Montreal for a road rage. But listen, again, it was a battle. It was a battle, and those players back then hated each other. And the Celtics and the Pistons hated each other, and the Bulls to overcome the Detroit Pistons and the physicality and the beatdowns. And then you saw once finally, I mean, game seven, the second year, Pippen gets the migraine and they lose that game. And we all thought that, hey, this was the year that they were going to do it. But then they come back and then they sweep them four straight. And then there's about 10 seconds left. And Laimbeer tells Isaiah, we're walking off. And Isaiah goes, yep, let's do it. And they just walked off the court before the game was even over. No shaking of the hands. And Jordan called Isaiah an a-hole. It's just great. It's great TV. And we lived it. We saw it back then. It's either you hated Detroit or you loved them. And the majority of us hated the Pistons. So you were upset. But it reminded me of the Celtics with Rondo and Kevin Garnett. I mean, they didn't shake hands with the Miami Heat when they finally lost to them. So, again, different eras. But it's a competitiveness, and you still see that Isaiah and Michael Jordan, they don't really love each other, Gabe.
When that happened at the time, I remember I thought it was a bitch move by the Pistons. Like, even in the era, although the Pistons said, hey, whatever, man. You know, and there were different. That's just the type of guys they are. And even Isaiah's sort of apology is not really even an apology when he said, "Yeah, I could have faked hugged you and said, you know, yeah, good win and all that type of stuff." But he's like, "Whatever," you know. And we didn't. And you know, maybe I would have done it differently. Look, and it really got deep, right? He wasn't on the dream team. What I found fascinating is John Sally did an interview on Monday after it, and he said, you know, something that really pissed Isaiah Thomas off was Isaiah's from Chicago. It's easy to forget that. So he's from Chicago. Jordan's like an idol in Chicago. He's got to go against him. Jordan's more popular than he is. And on top of it, I guess in the summertime, Isaiah went to like a family gathering and one of his cousins was wearing a Jordan jersey. And he really lost it for real. Like, he was genuinely pissed at the cousin. He genuinely hated Jordan. And Sally brought it up that it's bothered Isaiah that his cousin was a Jordan fan even. and, you know, it just ate up at him. It seems like Sally's the one that was, like, sort of laughing the most about it, eh? Like, Sally sort of sees it from both sides. He's like, oh, they're upset because we did this. Right? Lambeer's like, F them. He ain't apologizing. Like, he'll never apologize.
You will never do that. And Sally kind of bounced around afterwards, went with the Lakers. I mean, he loved his journey in the NBA. He got paid.
Yeah,
won
you're
some
right.
Championships. He had a lot of women. He lived a life, right? So he's like, hey, man. It's
all right.
Good.
He was just sort of there. He wasn't his crate. You're right. Like, if you think of the Pistons, Sally was there, but it's Joe Dumars. It's Isaiah Thomas, right? It was, you know, we can't forget about Mark Aguirre. As well, you know, they were just such a prickly team. Like, they weren't likable. That's the thing. Like, people look back, oh, the Bad Boys were so cool. I didn't like them. I remember being torn because I was a Michigan fan, and Michigan won in those days, too, if you remember. It was like 89, and Michigan Wolverines won, and, you know, the Raptors didn't even exist. But to me, I just didn't like Bill Laimbeer, bro. And the funny thing is, I never liked Larry Bird either. Like, I didn't like the Celtics or the Pistons. And I wasn't really a Bulls fan per se, but Jordan was that cool that you kind of pulled for him, you know?
No, you did. And I hated Laimbeer as
until he won all the time, Pete. And then I pulled against him. Then I was mad. Like, we'll get to that actually, how it changes. Because I remember you brought it up. So it was 1989. I remember I was living in Cartierville briefly in Montreal. It was like this dumpy apartment. And I remember I was really into the NBA and stuff. And it was one of those, you remember where you were. I remember I was in a Cartierville apartment and Jordan hit that shot against the Cavs.
Oh, listen, I left my house. I grew up in St. Leonard. I went to the park across my street and put on my Air Jordans that my dad bought from New York City. And I imitated that shot, you know, the double pump jump shot over Craig Elo, and then the celebration, you know, that's what a lot of kids are doing here after the Kawhi Leonard shot against Philly, right? These are iconic, historic shots that people will always remember where they were. But what I found interesting here, Gabe, is I have a lot of respect for Doug Collins as a player, as a coach, and as an analyst. I mean, he is an encyclopedia for basketball, a great analyst. And when he was the coach, Jordan loved him. But I just found out a little bit more detail that him and Tex Winter didn't get along, and he threw Tex Winter off the coaching the bench, right? And that led to his dismissal after leading the Bulls to the Eastern Conference Finals in 1989, and the bombshell that, hey, he's fired after only a couple of years, and now Phil Jackson takes over, who Jackson was every single day hanging around and learning the triangle offense off Tex Winter. So this was Jerry Krause who brought in Phil. And I think that was his plan. And Collins was more like, no, get the ball to Jordan, get out of the way. Jackson, at least they're portraying it that way.
That's what's cool, too. And, you know, it's interesting because you see after the relationship at the end, Jordan says, I won't play for anybody else besides him here in Chicago. But he openly says after a few drinks, he said, I was pissed when Phil Jackson took over. He said, I didn't like it. I didn't like him. And I was like, wow, I never heard him say that. He goes, I didn't like Phil Jackson. And I like what Jordan said. He goes, Doug Collins had a game plan to put the ball in my hands. Phil Jackson was coming in with a game plan to take the ball out of my hands. And it was interesting that Jordan, like, you know, saw it like that and was really upset. And it's funny, in the interview, Pippen even brings up Jordan had to, like, become a team player, man. You know what I mean? And you notice Paxson dropped something in there in one of the words he said. He was like, come on, Michael, we can help you. You know what I mean? Like, you just got to trust us. Like, we can help you, man. You know what I mean? But Jordan didn't trust them. Like, that was the thing. He didn't trust them at first, right? It took years to build that trust.
Right. And I think that, again, you see it in the documentary, especially when they're playing against the Lakers. And I remember that season because I grew up a Magic fan, as you know, and a Laker fan.
Oh, I remember that finals like it was yesterday, too.
James Worthy got hurt. Byron Scott had the hamstring. Magic wasn't 100%. Vlade Divac played well. It was the introduction to Vlade to the NBA. And they steal game one with Sam Perkins with the deep three to win game one. And we're like, oh, my God. This would have been Magic's sixth title in 10 years. People don't remember that. That Magic won 5 titles in 9 finals. Before he was at the age of 30. But again, what you saw was that the domination of Jordan with Pippen, the athleticism, there was no turning back. And then in game 5, fourth quarter was tied, and then they found John Paxson. I remember Paxson hit like 5 shots in a row. And again, it was game over. But I think here's the difference between Jordan and everybody else.
Paxson was Van Fleet.
Exactly.
Like Van Fleet for the Raptors. It was the same thing.
Jordan in 1989, there's no way in hell he's passing the ball to anybody on that shot down one. He's taking that, and everybody knew it. I think people who like to compare and bring up LeBron always likes to make the good basketball play first.
Yes.
And Jordan had that killer mentality. Jordan passed to John Paxson and to Steve Kerr, not when they were facing elimination. They were up in the series.
You're right. That's a good point.
I got another game, right?
That's a good point. When people hit that shot, it's like, yeah, dude, it was game 5, all right? He wasn't, like, giving them the series shot there.
They're up 3-1, you know what I mean? Yeah, so that's a big difference between Jordan and everybody else.
That's a really, really good point. I like what Jordan said, though. And he goes, so Phil Jackson calls the play. And it's not to me. He goes, it's to me to penetrate and to kick it out. And he's thinking, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Jordan wasn't even sure if he was going to do it. Like, you know what I mean? And he goes, so I take it in. And it was really cool to see, like, you know, all right, they show the play. He goes, so I take it in. He goes, I look over, and lo and behold, there's Paxson in the corner. He's open. So he goes, I flip it over to him, and he hits the shot. He goes, so the next possession, I did it again, and he hit it again, right? And it was funny. What I liked about it, too, was funny, was when they're starting the season off and it's not going well, and they're 4-4. Like, they need, like, double overtime or something to beat a bad Clipper team, and all the players said the same thing. They were like, Jordan was pissed. They were like, and they were saying it was miserable to be around. Like, you saw the clips in practice. Like, even Harper, he's like, Harper, what the F is wrong with you? And like, like during games, he was like chewing players out at the bench. Like, he was taking over for Jackson. He's like, I don't know, why are you standing over there? You know what he's going to, like, he's flipping out. And they were like, yeah, he wasn't a lot of fun to be around, you know, during that season. Get on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
The podcast that continues. We'll kick it with Pete Annapolis for another segment, and we'll bring Joe Lisi in. We'll talk some college football players now transitioning into the National Football League post NFL draft. And hey, the NBA draft is an interesting thing that not a lot of people are talking about right now. But as far as The Last Dance is concerned, real fascinating stuff. You know, the Rodman stuff, whatever. You know what I mean? We knew Rodman was an interesting dude, and he had a lot of stuff going on. It seemed to me that episodes 3 and 4 was really highlighted by the rivalry, the bad boys, the Pistons, the bad blood that exists. It appears as though Tony Kukoc is going to get some love in his documentary now.
He's next.
Yeah, he's going to get some love. And talking about guys that took it hard, and like, how hard was it for Tony Kukoc? Like, I saw an interview he did, and I didn't delve into it fully, but Tony Kukoc said, "I don't think anybody ever had a harder transition into the NBA than I did." That's what he said.
Well, you got the greatest player of all time, a top probably 50 player of all time that despised them before he even took a
step
into the United States of America.
They crushed them in the Olympics too, right? They killed them in the Olympics. Yeah.
They told Chuck Daly, they're like, "Hey, we're the only two guys that can cover Tony Kukoc, and we're covering him full court. So here's this dude who's playing Euroball, and it back then was, you know, decent competitive. And
but
so
not
you got
like
Jordan
now,
and Pippen going full court in your face, elbows, trash talking him. And then, okay, these guys are going to be my teammates. And they hated Jerry Krause for it, because Jerry Krause was like, he is the next superstar that we're going to have, and we're going to build around Tony. So poor guy Tony, who had a lot of talent, right? He was 6'11", lefty. He was like a point power forward. He had great vision, could shoot the ball, not necessarily just a three-point shooter, Gabe, but he was a guy that can make plays for his teammates, make plays for himself. Obviously wasn't a great, great defender, but a smart player. But I think that he really, really resonated well with that group for that second three-peat, because he was able to be the guy on that second unit that was able to move the basketball on the triangle and be the guy that I could create for himself or for others. So I'm excited for Tony and see about the sidelines. But so far, what we've seen in the first 4 episodes, he's on the plane reading a newspaper, legs crossed. He's just chilling. But we'll see sometimes when probably Jordan Pippen go after him hard, whether it's in practice or off the court. But it was a difficult transition for Kukoc, no question.
Yeah, and Jordan was hard on him in practice. I'm sure there'll be a clip of it too. But it's true. You notice that when Kukoc is there in the film, he seems to like really just want to be like mind his own business. Like, you know what I mean? Like you said, he's just sort of in his locker. He's like, he's not talking a lot. But a lot of guys weren't talking a lot. That's one thing that strikes me, too, is almost the fear that they had, right? Even though they were all multiple champions and stuff, they were scared of him. Like, they were. It was just like in the room, you know what I mean? If Jordan would crack a joke, everyone would sort of loosen up. But if he'd come in tense, then it would be tense. And Phil Jackson really couldn't control. But at the same point in time, too, I like seeing the sense of humor that Jordan had, right? Like, he would crack jokes with his teammates to try to loosen things up and stuff. But very, very, it's a fascinating look behind the scenes. I look forward to seeing where it goes. That's how good it is that you look forward to the next episode. You're like, all right, man, what's going to happen next here? And for all of Jerry Krause's, like, you know, he comes across as a jerk, but man, the guy made a lot of smart basketball moves, Pete. Huh? Like, when you look back on it, like even the Pippen deal, it's like, whatever, dude, he got one of the best players in the league to play for $1.8 million. It allowed him to sign these other guys. Like, you look at the trades, the moves, the signings, Krause did a good job. And just one thing I want to say about Jordan too, was when he said Phil Jackson wanted the ball in other teams' hands, other players' hands, and besides just me. And he goes, I didn't like it. And they were showing highlights of it. And there was like an end of a game, and they're like, oh, and the Bulls lose. And Bill Cartwright, like, tosses a total prick. And Jordan drops. I didn't want Bill effing Cartwright taking the last shot.
Yeah, it was awesome. I remember that as well. I was laughing when I was watching.
It was just
them.
Too like, funny.
The
too
ball's
funny.
Moving, but hey, you don't want Bill effing Cartwright touching the ball at the end. Yeah, and they show poor Bill Cartwright missing the shot. But if you remember, Gabe, during the first three-peat, the first quarter, every possession to start the first quarter, Jordan would get the ball to Cartwright. He knew that that was the time to get the big man the ball, get him touches, get him involved. But in the fourth quarter, forget about it. He's not touching the ball. Jordan was taking all those last ones. But you're right. And we saw how Jordan would loosen up when they're on the plane and they're gambling, they're playing cards. Jordan loved that part just as much as he loved playing on the court. Poor Scotty Burrell. Jordan calls him out there like, hey, you love the women, you're drinking.
Dude,
hey,
Scotty Burrell. Scotty Burrell, I just saw, Pete. He had to tell his family. Like, he actually had to tell. I don't know if he's still with or what the deal is, because you figure it's so long ago. Like, who cares what was said then, right? But I guess Scotty Burrell warned his family that, yeah, listen, I don't come across too good in this. And for people that didn't see it, they're on the plane, and Jordan's got the camera in his face. And he's sitting there with Scotty Burrell, and he's like, you all right, man? And Scotty Burrell's like really hung over on the plane type thing. And Jordan's like, man, he goes, you're hung over. He goes, I know you're hung over. He goes, I know. And then he says to him, he goes, you're always hung over, man. And he's like, man, stop, man. The camera's rolling. Burrell's getting mad, kind of like, yo, man, like, but it's Jordan. You can't tell him to shut up. So he's like, and then Jordan looks in the camera. And he goes, and I'm sure Scotty tells you he's working all night. Huh? He's quite the ladies' man, too. And then Burrell's like, yo, man, yo, yo. And then Jordan looks into the camera. He's like, Mrs. Burrell, your son's an alcoholic.
It was just great. But when you look at it, Gabe, you know, John Sally brought up a good point. You have Magic and Bird winning all those titles, and then Magic, and then Michael Jordan was the next one, right? The Bulls, Michael, they'll be the team. But Detroit got in between that, and then they won titles in 1989 and 1990. And you got to give those Piston teams credit because they weren't a fancy team. They did it dirty. They were the bad boys. And then Jordan came back, and then they won six out of the next eight. But the rivalries, the Eastern Conference was stacked. I mean, when you look at how good the Celtics were, then the Pistons, the Cavaliers were good, and then Michael and the Chicago Bulls took over. But once again, For the younger generation right now, there was no question, there was no chance that any of those guys would join their rivals, whether it be Jordan, Barkley, they hated each other. And right now we've seen the era since 2010 when LeBron joined Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, and Durant joined Golden State. Times were different. You wanted to beat your competitors. You didn't want to join them.
What do you make of the Barkley-Draymond Green feud? In which Draymond Green has said in the past, you know, Barkley's a blowhard, has never won a championship, is the worst guy on that set. I could do the job better. And it's not like buddies busting each other's balls. Like, Draymond's like, he doesn't know anything. He's never even won. He's like, at least Kenny's won. At least Shaq's won. He goes, hey, you know what? When I retire, I'm going to replace him. I'm smarter. I'm no more. And I've actually won. And he's taking shots. Barkley's told him to shut up before, but Draymond keeps coming back for more all the time. And so Draymond is saying that Barkley's just jealous because he's never won, and Draymond's won before. And Barkley said just this morning or last night type thing, did an interview with your boy Calipari. He's pretty cool. Calipari's got his own little interview video things he's doing. Mm-hmm. Barkley said, man, you're like the loser member of a boy band that no one knows who it is.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, he's like, the other guys are Timberlake and stuff, and you're like nobody. You're just there. And I kind of disagree with that, though. We saw the importance of Draymond when he wasn't there in that series, bro. Draymond hit a wall faster than the other guys because of the style that he plays. But Draymond Green was a massive part of that team's success. I don't buy in that Draymond was just along for the ride.
No, I, the way I look at it is this, Gabe. I think that Draymond Green is a throwback. He's old school. I love his competitive fire. I love the way he goes after people. He's not afraid to express his thoughts. That's first and foremost. Secondly, he was a very, very important part. He fit in the role perfectly. He was like the Dennis Rodman or the Robert Horry of those championship teams with the Lakers and the Spurs and Green with Golden State. I think that with Draymond, the situation is this. There's always levels, right? And Barkley's at a level that not many are at. Is he at the level where he won the championships like Bird, Magic, Jordan, and LeBron? No, but he is one of the probably the top 25 players of all time. MVP. I mean, he could have easily won one in 93. They missed some shots, the Phoenix Suns, and Jordan went wild. But Draymond needs to understand that he is not at the level of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant. I mean, in 2016, when the NBA suspended him and Cleveland came back from 3-1,
yeah.
Golden State, he should have gone suspended. Golden State would have won that series, and it was game over. So there's a lot of history was altered because of that move. But this year, and I'm not afraid to say it, and I like Draymond a lot, but when Steph Curry went down and Klay Thompson went down and Kevin Durant left, bolted to go to Brooklyn, my man Draymond Green averaged 8.6 rebounds this year, making $20 million a year. So he's a role player. He fits it perfectly. But he is not a number one, number two, or number three option.
You know what was crazy for him last year? He didn't give the effort.
Right.
And he was a little tired and stuff, but it was almost like, ah, whatever. Everyone, like, he would take a bad shot. He wasn't Draymond. It wasn't, you know, I'm curious to see what he has when the Warriors come back. And listen, the Warriors are going to be an interesting team when they come back because Curry is, you know, we saw Curry was making a rain right away when he came back. I expect Thompson will be the same thing. And they're going to be rested. They've got Wiggins. You and I talked about it. They've got Wiggins. They've got that draft pick. They're going to have a top draft pick. Word is they don't like any of the players, though. So I wouldn't be surprised if they traded the pick. If they get a real NBA star for the pick, they might do it. Like they don't look at it like, wow, we're going to groom some young star like LaMelo Ball or something. I think they look at it like we're not that young. You know what I mean? We could win now, but we got to stack this roster. So let's flip. Maybe we could flip the second or third pick in the draft if that's what it comes to. It'll be interesting to see. But I wanted to ask you, out of all these championships, you brought it up. So Phoenix were sort of in it. My memory to me is Seattle. Even though Seattle lost the first three games, they won the next two. And, you know, the game six was close. To me, the Seattle team was the one that really could have beaten them. Because it's funny, because remember I told you earlier, I was pulling for Jordan at first, but it's almost like the Warriors. Like, when a team wins all the time, it's like, oh, God. And I'm a betting man, so I was always getting big points. Oh, I'm getting to see the Sonics plus eight. You know what I mean? And I had to jump in all the time. But to me, you know, the Laker one was fun, but to me, the Seattle series was the one where you legitimately thought, because, man, that Sonic team was stacked, bro.
They were very stacked, and here's the situation. The one thing the Chicago Bulls team doesn't get enough credit for, especially the second three-peat team from 96 to 98. They were incredible defensively. Jordan, Harper, Pippen, Rodman, and then you had Longley in the middle. I mean, it was difficult to score. But what the Bulls had problems with was containing really athletic, dominant big men. Malone gave them issues, but Malone was too really hung on those jump shots from the perimeter. He really didn't go inside. But they couldn't handle Sean Kemp because Sean Kemp was a beast. He was young. He was super athletic, 6'10", 260. And Gary Payton was getting into the paint. You needed to have some scoring, some outside scoring to beat the Chicago Bulls. And that's why Seattle was so close because of what they had inside with Kemp.
Yeah.
And they had some great shooting with Detlef Schrempf and some of those guys.
Sam Perkins, yeah. Hawkins. And another thing, too, if you remember, Utah, we knew down deep inside Utah wasn't going to beat them. You know what I mean? And Utah knew. It was one of those, like, yeah, same with Phoenix. It was like, yeah, you guys are kind of in it, but you're not. You are, but you're not. Portland got run out of the gym. The Lakers were a little older. Seattle was that one team at the time, I remember. They weren't intimidated either, Pete. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Gary Payton wasn't intimidated by Jordan. Like, Sean Kemp wasn't scared of Pippen. You know what I mean? Like, I remember they were talking smack back, and it was like, I was like, man, this is the closest 3-0 series I've ever seen. And people were like, oh, it's going to be a sweep. I'm like, they're not going down like this. Like, nowadays, it would have been a sweep. Teams would roll over, right? But the seed, they were like, no, we're not going down like this. And then they win the next two. That was a really, really fun one. And we've only got a couple of minutes left here, under 2 minutes. And I brought up, we can continue as we break it down next week more, about the Bulls. And the one matchup that we never saw was him against Hakeem Olajuwon, ironically enough.
Oh, man. Listen, I mentioned earlier, the Bulls never faced a dominating center. They faced a couple of dominating power forwards in Barkley, Sean Kemp, and Karl Malone. But a center like Hakeem was in his prime, surrounded by shooters, I think this would have posed a threat and a problem to the Chicago Bulls.
Look, they won twice, Pete, right? So Jordan wasn't there. They won twice, the Rockets. Let's say they played the Bulls twice. I said the other night to someone, I'd give them one of them. I think that Rocket team was good enough to beat the Bulls, like one out of two times. I don't think they would, you know, out of all those other teams, like you said, with the outside shooting that they had, with the inside, with Drexler and with Hakeem, they were a matchup problem for anybody.
They had Otis Thorpe, they had Maxwell, they had Kenny Smith, Sam Cassell on the other side. Right, the great coach and Rudy T. I would agree. I think that some people would say Jordan would have gone 8 for 8, but I think that they never played that dominant center, and Hakeem, I think, just had it, and he wasn't a one-hit wonder. I mean, he had to go through the West all those years against Magic and all those teams, and when he had the opportunity, he won back-to-back. I think I would agree with you. I would echo your sentiments, Gabe. I think that one of those championships they would have won. And some people, yes, Jordan came back that year in 95, and they got eliminated by Shaq and Penny. And I think one of the reasons why they got eliminated, yes, Jordan was rusty, only played about a few games before he came out of retirement, but it's that center factor. They had nobody to stop Shaquille O'Neal. And I think then Hakeem swept the young Orlando Magic, young Shaquille O'Neal, young Penny Hardaway, with Nick Anderson and get Dennis Scott. Poor Nick Anderson will still remember those free throws he missed.
Pete, we got to get out of here. We'll continue the conversation next week. It's always fun. And, you know, I can guarantee you the series will give us more fodder to break down. Pete, always a pleasure, my man.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get on to Grant Sports Grid. Marenzi Unfiltered, the podcast continues. Thanks to RDS Television, Pete Annapolis, for joining us as Pete joins me on a weekly basis. Normally we talk NBA basketball. We've been talking about this Last Dance documentary. It's been great stuff. It was a busy weekend over the weekend with the Last Dance documentary, the Homeland series finale was on. Better Call Saul season ending a couple of days ago or last week as well. And oh yeah, of course the NFL draft as well. And let's bring in a man. It was part of Sports Grid's coverage of the National Football League draft, and a man that watches more college football and loves college football more than anybody in America, Joe Lisi. Goes for two all the time. What's up, Joe? How you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing well, Gabe. Not a bad draft over the weekend, and wet the palate, hopefully, for the 2020 season in college and pro upcoming.
Well, you know what? You're a college guy, but you're a Miami Dolphin fan. And, you know, you've been a long time suffering, Miami Dolphin fan. It's been a rough ride for the Dolphins over the past decade plus or so. But as a Buffalo Bill fan, I look at the Dolphins and I'm like, oh boy, these guys are really putting it together right now. I like Coach Flores a lot. A lot of these Patriot assistants don't pan out, but you got to respect Flores, the way that those guys played for him last year. The organization was trying to tank and not win games. They kept, you know, they didn't give him much talent to work with, and he still went out there and competed. And they were a good team against the spread. They were hanging around. And now, you know, they get some talent. It's been a long time coming, man. You guys got yourself a franchise quarterback. Are you happy the two is your quarterback?
Well, I'm happy now. I wasn't happy prior to the draft. I wanted them to go defense with Isaiah Simmons, but I'm all in with Tua now. I have to back him. You know, it reminds me of the draft with Tannehill back when they drafted him out of Texas A&M with Mike Sherman. He was raw. He was inexperienced. Now Tua coming off the injury. Do they throw him right into the fire this year? I think you do. I think if he's healthy, you got to get him in there.
Yeah.
And the role talent that they got around him, I really like the deeper draft that they had here. Jackson, they got some Evan Weaver they got from Boise State. They got a quality draft from top to bottom. A lot of kids that can come in and can contribute on both sides of the ball. So I'm very happy about that.
So, you know, it's an interesting point that you bring up. And I kicked it around, and nobody ever seems to like it. But I brought it up, like, if you were the Dolphins or the Chargers, you got a quarterback like Jameis Winston out there. Now, I think it was more so for the Chargers because the Dolphins are rebuilding a little bit more than the Chargers are. But, you know, you stockpile other talent, and you don't have to use the pick on a quarterback, and you get a quarterback that can come in and throw 50 touchdown passes. So if you didn't want to go quarterback with the first pick, so you guys had, what, 5, 18, and 26, what would you have done? Would you, like, because you have Fitz and Rosen right now, would you have taken a quarterback later if you were drafting? What would you have done, like, going into that if you didn't want to take Tua with the and you were going to go Isaiah Simmons?
I would have made a run for Cam Newton in the free agent market as well. I mean, I would have been all in with Cam as our quarterback and having those defensive playmakers and then building with another running back. I know they got Breida in terms of the free agent market, but I would have picked up a DeAndre Swift possibly in the first round, whether it be 18 or where, you know, in the later, the 30th pick. And that
or even exactly. Let's say you go Isaiah Simmons 5, Isaiah Simmons 5, offensive lineman 18, and then boom, wide receiver 26, or DeAndre Swift or Hilaire or Jonathan Taylor or something.
Right, you could have went that regard as well. Now, they got some quality picks. Blake Ferguson, he's going to be a playmaker, I mean, from LSU. Blue-collar kid, he can come in and contribute. Jackson, the offensive lineman for USC. I mentioned Weaver, Curtis Weaver, just plays with a motor for Boise State. So they have playmakers now that not just for offense and defense, but special teams as well. So now we have to see if we can cultivate this talent up in terms of practice time, because that's what you want to see, these young talent come in and contribute on both sides of the football.
What teams did you like to draft the most?
Well, I mean, I like what Cincinnati did. I mean, to get Burrow, to come back with T. Higgins 1-2, I mean, that was solid. But I was very impressed as well with the Colts in Jacksonville. I like what they did as well. The Colts picked up Michael Pittman. I thought that was very solid for them. I think he was a number one draft pick in terms of my draft board.
For talent to get Taylor and Pittman, that really bolsters them.
Yeah, I like what Jacksonville and the Colts did on both sides of the football. Now, I know everybody's raving about what Baltimore did. I think they upgraded as well in terms of the playmakers they got. I think they had a solid draft in Denver. I mean, how about Denver? They get Jerry Jeudy. I mean, that was phenomenal. KJ Hamler,
yeah.
I mean, 1-2. They put the pieces around him, and then they got Alfred O from Missouri to go with Noah Fant. I mean, Drew Lock is surrounded with offensive weapons now. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I do. I know. I really, really, really like what they did. If you look at the Broncos offense right now, I like what Drew Lock brought to the table. Quarterbacks always get better after they've seen live bullets. So I expect more from Drew Lock now. You bring in Melvin Gordon on a very affordable contract, $8 million a year. You have a nice Gordon and Lindsey and Booker back there. That's a nice way to go. Your wide receivers, you got some, you know, Hamler's a speed burner. Jerry Jeudy runs NFL crisp routes already. He's like a, you know, ready to start in week one. You got Cortland Sutton on the other side. As you mentioned, you got Noah Fant. Vic Fangio's defense is a complicated scheme that, you know, they're going to get better after a year or two learning the packages. It's very, you know, you really have to think a lot in his scheme. I like the direction the football team's going in a lot. I like Denver's direction a lot, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. Albert O from I don't even want to attempt his last name. I butcher him as it is. But, I mean, for me, he's going to be an added piece in that offense as well. Now, the only thing is for Fangio is can they be aggressive? I think that was the one thing as the season progressed, he sort of opened up the offense. But I think they have to go balls to the wall early on. You have the playmakers. You have the defensive talent in terms of Von Miller and that defensive front seven. They could be a top team, and they can challenge Kansas City if they're hitting on all cylinders. I mean, look at what they did against Houston on the road last year.
You know, I think Denver are like 2 years away. They need Locke to sort of, you know, go through a couple more growing pains. Quarterbacks in year three and year four. But I'll tell you, last year too, Joe, the Broncos had the worst luck out of any team in the NFL. Like, they really did. Like, they got screwed hard, man, like a couple of times. On their home field, too. Like, Von Miller got a rough and a penalty passer against Jacksonville that was bogus that led to a field goal. They got totally hosed and robbed against the Chicago Bears in a game. You know, they really did. So let me ask you about my team, the Buffalo Bills. I think they had a rock-solid draft. The Bills already have a rock-solid roster as it is. So Espinosa's a guy, you know, guy plays well on game day. I guess, he had a bad combine. I guess he doesn't work out well and stuff like that. So he sort of fell a little bit, but he's a mean kid. He's a big kid. He's a mean kid. He can get after the quarterback. I really like the Zach Moss combination now with Devin Singletary and Zach Moss. So what do you think of those two? And I wanted your take on Gabriel Davis out of UCF. And what do you think he brings to the table?
Yeah, I mean, just overall, in terms of Buffalo, I was very impressed with them last year. I thought he did a fantastic job in terms of coaching that team up. Now, Epinesa, if this was a couple of years ago, I mean, he led Iowa in sacks, and he was only a role player. He's a blue-collar kid, has great technique. I don't put into a lot in terms of what they have in terms of, you know, looking at what he did in the combine, because quite honestly, you look at what he did in the Big Ten, he just dominated, and he's solid in run support. So I agree with you in terms of I think he's going to come in. I think he's going to be a player immediately. I think when you look at it overall, Zach Moss, to me, he was another big play running back in the Pac-12. Now, he reminds you of Joe Williams, who was there previously, that went on to the NFL. The only concern about Zach Moss in terms of he's splitting carries with Singletary, but how many carries has he had in college? Is he worn down? Can he carry the load? Because he's a physical running back. But the 1-2 punch of him and Singletary are going to be fantastic. Now, Gabriel Davis from UCF, I mean, I think he's another guy that can stretch defenses vertically, has great hands. I think he's going to be a legitimate playmaker and give Josh Allen another weapon. I think the only concern for Buffalo is would you have reached up and taken Jake Fromm that high? I mean, fifth round, I get it, but I mean, he's not going to challenge Josh Allen for the starting job. They only did it, what, because Belichick was on the radar there for him?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think they're already pretty, you know, their roster is pretty strong. It's 167th pick overall. You know what I mean? You know, they could have taken a flyer on a lineman or something, an offensive lineman. I could have lived with that. It's interesting. They said after that they weren't planning on taking a quarterback. And that they weren't planning on taking Jake Fromm, but that he was still there. And the Brian Daboll connections to Alabama, Joe. Right? So Daboll was at Alabama, and he basically stated, listen, I've scouted this kid a lot. I know him. I know coaches that know him. We were in the SEC. He's a genius. They basically said he's one of the smartest kids we've ever seen as far as quarterback. Really smart game manager. They think he can help in practice and he can help Josh Allen see things, right? I mean, did you have to take him there? Listen, you know what I love? I love the Eason pick to the Colts. Perfect spot for Eason. To learn behind Frank Reich and Rivers for a year? Come on, that's perfect.
Yeah, and Jake Eason, when we spoke, when we did the breakdown on Game Time Decisions in terms of the quarterbacks, he was my sleeper for the draft. I thought that was the one quarterback that could have upside. So I love what Indianapolis did. I think they took him right there. Let's be honest. I mean, Philip Rivers is not getting any younger. If he starts out and goes slow, they go to Brissett early as a backup role. If he struggles later in the year and they're not a playoff team, you could always turn to Jake Eason, and he can learn from both of those players. So I think it was a great pick. I'll tell you this about Buffalo's selection of Isaiah Hodgins in terms of Hodgins for Oregon State, a big lanky wide receiver, 6'4", he's about 210 pounds, he catches the football at a tightest point. I like him as well. I mean, to pick him up in the sixth round, Gabe, he's going to be a playmaker for that offense. He might not start fast, but as this season progresses, I think he's going to be a legitimate playmaker for this offense.
Yeah, Brandon Bean just does a great job recognizing physical players that can go up and get a football. You look at the wide receiver core right now, Joe, very impressive. Stephon Diggs, John Brown, Gabriel Davis, Dawson Knox, Tyler Kraft. And, you know, listen, Robert Foster was playing good football for them too. It was actually competition for spots. I like the direction the Bills are going in right now a lot. So I wanted to talk about some of the other teams here as well. The New York Giants. What did you make of Andrew Thomas being the first guy taken? A lot of people thought it was going to be Wirfs, and then Wirfs ends up falling to Tampa. The line stuff was interesting how it played out.
It was. I had Wirfs ranked a little bit higher than Thomas, but Thomas is a legitimate playmaker at the tackle position. Very solid in run support. Comes from a blue-collar offensive line. In Georgia, that was their MO. They wanted to run the football. Now, in the first
That's
half
a good
of the season,
point. A lot of these college kids, Joe, it's a good point. Linemen, they can't run. They can't run block. You know, they play in spread offenses. They always did a stand up position. And it's a very good point that you raise as far as that. The Giants want to run the ball. This kid ran the ball at Georgia. He didn't come from some like candy spread offense.
Right, and keep in mind that over the last couple of years, every time Georgia ran and pounded the rock for over 200, they were undefeated for the most part. So think about that. Since 2016, entering last year, they had like a 21-0 record every time they pounded the rock for over 200 yards, and he was a main reason why. So, again, pass protection, I like him. I think Wirfs is the more complete all-around offensive tackle that in, you know, 4 or 5 years he'll still be an all-pro, and I think Thomas can be there as well. I just think right here, right now, Thomas is more maybe game-ready to step in and help the Giants immediately for that need. I think Wirfs will fit in terms of, you know, where he was picked for Tampa Bay, but I like the pick for Thomas. Don't have a problem with it, although you could have made the argument for Giants fans for Isaiah Simmons as well.
No, you could have. But, you know, you look at the Giants, and, you know, to me, and I agree, they need linebacker help. But you can't, you know, you only got one pick there. You can't take everybody. And you look, three of their first five picks offensive line. Andrew Thomas, I tell you, this Matt Parrott kid out of UConn, quite an athlete. You know, people don't realize, you know, he plays on UConn. Now, the kid's a monster of a man and a very good athlete. They get the guard Shane Lemieux out of Oregon as well. Three out of their five first picks offensive line to help Jones and to help Barkley.
Yeah, and that's what they obviously want to do, right? They don't want to have the game rely on Daniel Jones's arm on each and every drive, because he's more effective when Barkley's running the football. They're utilizing the short to intermediate passing game, and Daniel Jones can utilize his legs outside the pocket. If you put them in long third down situations, go back to that Green Bay game, he struggled because he has to stare down receivers. So that's why they want to run the football. We'll see if they can do it. Now, defense could be get a boost. As long as New York can sustain drives, they won't be out there for long periods of time, and they could make up for the defensive inefficiencies for that unit.
Well, Joe, we've got 1 minute left here, buddy. NFL football, there was a report about a tentative schedule in which they would start in mid-October. Nobody loves college ball as much as you do. We're on the clock right now, Joe. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, man.
Yeah, we have July, I believe it's 17th and July 23rd. If we want to start the season on schedule, we need to have the kids practicing by both of those times for the August 29th, week zero, and the September 3rd, Saturday, week one games.
Wow, that's challenging. That's challenging. It's going to be interesting to see, because the pro leagues, they can sort of force players to play. They're getting paid. Like, this college stuff is going to be interesting. But I'm not saying I don't think there won't be. I don't know if every conference is going to play, but I think there'll be some college football. Joe, we'll definitely do this again. It's always a pleasure, my man.
Anytime, Gabe. Love the show.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.